You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
I'm Richard Hake, sitting in for Leonard Lopate today. The show's Summer Stuff series has been looking at ways to enjoy summer in the city. And for today's edition, in honor of National Oyster Day, we're looking at summer seafood. Chef Rebecca Charles is owner of Pearl Oyster Bar in the West Village and author of Lobster Rolls and Blueberry Pie, Three Generations of Recipes and Stories from Summers on the Coast of Maine, published by HarperCollins. She joins us now to share her expertise on oysters, clams, lobsters, and everything else that swims. Rebecca, welcome.
Hey, Richard. Nice to be here.
We also want to invite you to participate. If you have a question about how to cook with seafood, call us at 646-829-3985, or you can also leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. Now, Rebecca, we're going to talk all things seafood, but let's start with the lobster roll. Your restaurant, the Pearl Oyster Bar, used to be the only places you could really get one, but now a lot of places are popping up all over the city. There's a new place in the financial district where you can find lobster rolls. Talk about, and I know there's kind of two camps for lobster rolls. Some people like it kind of wet, and other people like it a little bit dry. That's what I've found. Tell us about the lobster roll.
I don't know if wet and dry is the way I describe it. That's sort of like a vacuum cleaner terminology, but lobster rolls can be had two ways. Most popularly, I think, is the way I make it, which is the lobster salad. So the lobster salad is cold and it's put into a hot, toasted, buttered bun. The other way is to just put the lobster itself with a little drawn butter on the bun. And there are a lot of people sort of, you know, particularly the new guys in town with the lobster roll restaurants that are saying, you know, even using my restaurant by name, saying Pearl Oyster Bar doesn't know how to make a lobster roll. This is the way you make it. This is the way it's eaten in Maine. Well, frankly, there are two ways to eat it. From, you know, Maine to Connecticut to Massachusetts to New York, there are two ways to eat it. And it just depends on what your personal choice is. Mine is the lobster salad. Because if I want to eat lobster with butter on it, I don't want it on bread. I want the whole lobster with the butter and the lemon and the whole deal. I don't want to put it on a hot dog bun. So I think that the way I make it lends itself more to a sandwich.
Well, we are very fortunate on this Friday afternoon that you brought a small stovetop here in our studio, and you are actually going to make us a lobster roll.
While we're talking, I'm going to make you a lobster roll just because I like to bring props,
even if
it's cooking on the radio.
And I like to eat.
And they can't see it, and they can't smell it. They can hear us.
Okay, well, why don't you describe what you're about to do and how you're going to make this
Hopefully without blowing up your studio. I've got a little portable burner here, and I'm going to toast the buns in lots of whole butter on this burner.
The bun is kind of one of the most important parts of the lobster roll, right?
It actually is, and the way you prepare the bun is also very important. And I think a lot of the knockoffs, what are now my competitors, they realize that that stuff is super important. I mean, it took me a long time to pick the perfect bun. I lived in Maine for many years. They don't have good buns up there, you know. But I grew up in New York, and I remembered Pepperidge Farm. And I knew that they made, you know, what I call top loading. They call them top sliced buns.
Which buns do you use in the restaurant?
You have to use a top sliced or what I call top loaders for this kind of sandwich.
So it's not like that typical hot dog bun.
Right, but New York is a side loading bun town.
Okay.
Because we always ate hot dogs in New York. We didn't put anything else in this. To put other things in this besides that one long wiener, you want something that will sit up and not roll over.
Okay.
So that's why you have a top slice bun. And you'll find these all over New England. But they're made by companies that I think are, you know, put out kind of an inferior product. You couldn't get these in New York when I opened my restaurant almost 15 years ago. So I had to call Pepperidge Farm at the corporate headquarters and get a route driver to come specially to me. Now, this route driver has gotten rich because now he's not only coming to me, but he's coming to all my competitors.
Oh, boy. Okay.
And selling them the same product. So more power to Al Epler, because he's put I don't know how many of his kids through college on the backs of selling this Pepperidge Farm bun to us.
Okay, so you're about to take the butter and put it into the
Now, I've talked so long that I let my pan get a little hot, so I'm going to pull it off. And, boy, I'm sure you can hear that on the radio.
That's great sound on the radio.
There's nothing better than butter sizzling in a pan. All right, so melting butter. And then you're going to put the buns in on their sides because you want those sides to get nice and golden brown.
Okay.
And I'm a fiend about golden brown. That's what you aspire to when you're cooking just about anything.
Sure.
Roast chicken, yeah. Buns, whatever. Just let it sit in there on the toasted butter, on the melting butter. As soon as you get that really nice color, flip it over, do the other side. And then before you use them, let them sit for just a couple of minutes. If you use them right away, it won't be right.
Okay.
There's a little trick, and that's that they need to steam a little bit.
Hmm.
And after they steam for a couple of minutes, you open them up with your fingers to put the lobster salad in. You can feel the insides are like just baked softness.
I think butter is one of the most amazing smells, because this entire studio...
I know. All those people are going to be beating this glass window down to get in here. Okay, so I'm shutting this burner off now, because it does have a little bit of gas leak, and I didn't tell you that earlier, because I didn't think you'd let me use it.
Okay.
So let's shut that off, get the gas away. Okay, good. So that's it. That's
they
that
look delicious.
That's that
beautiful
golden color. And this is being a shot for your website, so
yeah,
anybody that looks at the internet, looks at your website can see.
Later on, go to WBMYC.org, and you can watch as Rebecca Charles makes our lobster rolls for this afternoon.
So that's the bun thing. Then when you get to the lobster salad, also, it's...
Talk a little bit about the lobster itself. Do you go for specific types of lobsters? Does it have to be a Maine lobster?
Okay, it doesn't have to be a Maine lobster. I love Maine. My family's been visiting Maine since 1917. My mother lives there now. I will live there when I retire. I go there once a month for a week. But it doesn't have to be a Maine lobster. I know that a lot of people say, there's a big difference between Maine and Canadian, and that's really crock. And I know probably 40 people are going to call in right now. They're on their phones going, no, she said, no, of course there's a difference. And you know what? Frankly, it's the same species of lobster. But that said, there can be small differences in the way that lobsters taste because, you are what you eat. They're eating different things. Wild lobsters that are caught in Maine in traps, and hand harvested, they're out there, grabbing little bits of stuff out of the water, whereas lobsters that are kept, for instance, in the coastal pens of Canada, where they all sit there and wait for people like me to buy large amounts of lobster, they're crowded, they're being fed other things, and so, yeah, there can be differences in the flavor of the meat.
So you can actually taste the differences?
Sometimes you can, sometimes you can't. I mean, a blindfold taste test... That's not always going to be, you're not always going to be able to tell the difference.
Where's a great place here in the New York area to get lobster?
In a restaurant?
No, or, if you were to purchase it to make it at home.
We've lost a lot of our fish markets in New York, and I think that's kind of criminal. In the neighborhood where my restaurant is, which is the West Village, or actually what they call more Central Village, it was traditionally an Italian neighborhood, and I remember there were three fish markets right there on Bleecker Street that are gone. But you could go to... the Lobster Place, which has a big facility in the Chelsea Market, which is a terrific place to shop for food. And they have a little outlet on Bleecker Street, and also Citarella, which is, when I'm cooking at home and I'm not harvesting from my walk-in at the restaurant, I go to Citarella for fish.
Okay, are those buns ready now?
Are you hungry?
I am a little hungry, yes.
Okay, so the lobster salad, next thing is, the most important thing with a lobster, whether it's Maine or Canadian or Nova Scotia Inn or whatever, don't overcook it. That's the most important thing. Now, depending on the size of the lobster.
So you've just steamed these lobsters and then...
Yeah, we have a steamer that we bought actually fairly recently in the life of the restaurant a few years ago. We used to boil everything, or rather steam everything on the stovetop. So we had these huge hotel pans with the perforated ones on top, and we'd steam them. And I ruined my stove doing that because they'd overflow, and all that salt water, ruined my stove.
Okay, so now you're stuffing each of the buns your salad.
Gets overstuffed with this perfectly cooked or as perfectly cooked as we can. The lobster wants to be tender. Also, in a lobster roll... I know a lot of these sort of newfangled companies that just want to cookie cutter and roll out new locations and make money. That's not the way you run a restaurant. That's a food outlet. But in any case, they're doing just claw meat, which I find absurd. Huh. It should have all the meat that's in the lobster.
So each roll will have part of the claw and part of the tail.
And yes, and the original knockoff years ago, isn't serving the knuckle meat. The knuckle meat is the tastiest part. But if you go to her place for a lobster roll, you're not going to get the knuckle meat. She uses it for something else.
We're talking with Chef Rebecca Charles of the Pearl Oyster Bar, and her restaurant is in the West Village on Cornelia Street between Bleecker and 6th Avenue. She's making us lobster rolls. It's part of our Summer in the City series. We're talking seafood. So right now she is just finishing up stuffing each of these buns that she heated here in our studio.
My chives. I must have lost them somewhere along the way. We top these with very finely sliced fresh chives. And that's it. And you can see, I'm going to hold this up for your video camera so people can see it on the internet, identifiable pieces of claw, tail, and knuckle. And we do such a huge amount of this at Pearl that we actually get lobsters of all different sizes, depending on what's in the market. Sometimes they're 2 to 5 pounds. Sometimes they're small. Sometimes we just get claws.
What else do you mix in with the lobster meat, or is that a secret recipe?
Okay. What I always used to say was, you know, nothing's a secret except my mother's Caesar salad dressing. Because, okay, you know what? It's her recipe. I can't give it out. I never really believed in you know, hoarding recipes, and you know, people always say chefs they'll leave out one ingredient or something like that. I never used to think that was right, but now that I'm older and more experienced, I think you should lie. But in any case, it's all in my cookbook, so there's the cat's out of the bag. If you can make a tuna sandwich, you can make a lobster roll. It's just mayonnaise, salt, pepper, lemon, and a little bit of finely chopped celery, and that's it, which is the way you'd make a tuna salad. So, yeah, you want it, you can't have it. It's for him. Brought it for him.
So is it time to taste it?
I think so, but we don't have any forks or knives, and you're going to have to, you know,
I think I can
pick it up
and
eat it.
I can make do. Okay. This looks delicious.
And there's no napkins either because this is radio.
It's radio,
so you can use my kitchen towel if you want.
Oh, that's great.
You can talk with your mouth full because nobody can see you.
You can really taste the lemon. The lemon really makes it.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's so many little details that have to be right. And when I was growing up going to Maine for the summer, as I did as a child, you know, year after year, we would eat this food. And as I got older and started to cook for a living, I thought, you know, I love the idea of this, but it's just not made right. It's almost always overcooked or too old. I don't like the mayonnaise. I don't like the bun. And so when I came up with this idea for Pearl, I thought, let me take all of those New England coastal foods that I love so much and cook them the way a chef would, you know, elevate all those little things and get all those details right. And so that's why I think my lobster roll sort of...
What is also remarkable is the flavor of the butter that you can taste actually in the bun.
Mm-hmm.
It's in the bun. Normally we would, you know, dip the lobster in the butter, but this is a great way to experience it.
To combine. Yeah, yes, you get the mayonnaise and the butter.
Yeah, I definitely think I got part of the claw, which is my favorite part.
Really?
Yes.
I'm a tail gal myself. But you know what? There's room for everybody. It's really all about what you prefer.
I'm speaking with Chef Rebecca Charles of the Pearl Oyster Bar. We're talking about how to pick, prepare, and enjoy seafood as part of our Summer in the City series. And you can give us a call as well if you have a question or a comment at 646-829-3985. You can also leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. We will be back more after a quick break. I'm Richard Hake, sitting in for Leonard Lope today. It's our Summer Stuff in the City series. We are looking at summer seafood. Today we have Chef Rebecca Charles, owner of Pearl Oyster Bar, which is in the West Village on Cornelia Street between Bleecker and 6th Avenue. She's also the author of the book Lobster Rolls and Blueberry Pie, 3 generations of recipes and stories from summers on the coast of Maine. We're also looking for your comments and questions. You can call us at 646-829-3985. Or you can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. And Rebecca, you know, we're doing this series of seafood in the summer, but I eat seafood all year long. Do you find that people tend to eat fish more in the summer than they do in the winter?
You know, thanks for opening that door, because if you hadn't, I was kicking it down. Our business drops, like, sharply in the winter, and it drives me crazy, because this food is as good in the winter as it is in the summer. I don't really understand why people identify it so strongly with summer. I guess they do
it because
it's
of the water.
Because because they go to the beach, they take their summer vacation, and that's why they identify it so with they call it beach food even. But take your vacation in January or February, go anywhere in New England, you're still eating this food. It's still being served.
Let's talk about one summer tradition. This is something that I actually do with a bunch of my friends on Fire Island. We have a house out there, and we do a clam bake every year. We call it Lobster Fest.
Yeah.
What is the best? First of all, talk a little bit about the traditional clam bake. You kind of do it on the beach.
It's such history now.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate, but you can't really have a clam bake anymore.
Right.
It's not legal to cook on beaches for the most part.
Sure.
I suppose if you had a private island somewhere, you could do whatever you want, but... when I was a child, and I'm probably the last generation that remembers actually having clam bakes, you would dig a large hole in the sand, or somebody's father would, and the idea is that you build a fire, but that you also have rocks, large rocks that will then hold the heat. So you build a big wood fire. Then when the wood simmers down, turns to ash, the rock should be like coals, like burning, burning hot. And then you start layering. And the idea is that you get lots of wet seaweed, and you start with the thing that takes the longest to cook on the bottom. So that would be like lobsters, potatoes, and you start layering. And then next layer would be probably the corn, sausages,
mm-hmm.
usually some kind of you could use chorizo, linguiça, kielbasa even. And then, start with that stuff and then start putting the shellfish on the top. I would start with, if you had hard-shelled clams, they take a long time to open. I would then put the clams down. If you have steamers, mussels, shrimp even on the top, and on and on. So the historic traditional clam bake done on the beach, everything covered then with a wet, like tarp,
mm-hmm.
like a burlap thing that was breathable but soaking wet. And it would, cook for hours and it would be steaming. I think a lot of times they put a metal grate down on the bottom on top of the rocks.
But now, like today, if I were to do a clam bake, I put stuff in an aluminum, like a ziti pan that seals on the top. And I put in a lobster. And each person will get one. Some mussels, some clams, usually some small potatoes, new potatoes.
Right.
And a sausage and a ear of corn.
Yeah.
And I actually just throw them on the grill.
Uh-huh.
And let them all steam together there for a little while, and each person gets a little special facial when they open up.
So they're all on the same level.
They are all on the same level.
Uh-huh.
But they cook pretty well all at the same time.
Yeah.
How would you suggest if you wanted to do a clam bake, like maybe on your barbecue grill or in your kitchen?
It's funny. I was thinking about this last night. I was home in my kitchen, which I love. I finally have a real chef's kitchen at home. And I was looking at my equipment there and I was thinking, God, there are so many more imaginative ways to build an urban clam bake than just using a pot, a stock pot. Of course, you can do it in a stock pot. And like I said before, just kind of layer. But I started thinking, you could do this in a bamboo steamer. You could do this. And I had a beautiful fondue pot that I was thinking about trying it out in, which, has a heat on the bottom. And then it has a copper pot and then a ceramic insert, and the ceramic would keep everything nice and hot. You can even bring it to the table and serve it like that. So I would counsel people to sort of try to be even a little bit creative about the vessel that they use to cook in. It's simply a matter, the theory is, though, start with the thing that takes the longest to cook. Make sure that everything fits comfortably
mm-hmm.
in the thing you're using, whatever it turns out to be.
Because you want it to steam. Is that the...
And that's right. And also you don't want to overcook the stuff on the bottom. So make sure that they're layered properly with, lobster, potato, corn on the bottom and then the shellfish on the top.
Do you use any kind of steaming liquid? Do you put some white wine in there or water or is there enough in the seafood already?
You could make a broth
mm-hmm.
by starting with a few inches of liquid and then when all that shellfish opens, all that mussel juice, clam juice, that's all going to run down all over everything. And of course, that was the idea of the seaweed originally.
Mm-hmm.
The seaweed
from
the ocean had seawater in it. So all those little things that used to pop when you were a kid, all that would like pop and crackle and all that liquid would wash down all over everything.
We also want to call us up with your questions or comments on cooking seafood at 646-829-3985. And we do have a call. If you put on your headphones, you can actually hear our caller. This is Elizabeth calling from Brooklyn. Elizabeth, are you there? I'm sorry. Amy in Manhattan.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
Question. question. How do you tell if the lobster is cooked? Rebecca Charles said, do not overcook. And if you're boiling, how do you know? If you're steaming, how do you know? And is the boiling less painful for the lobster than steaming?
Okay. She couldn't hear the call because she didn't have her headphones on right away. But, Rebecca, I'm going to translate the question. How do you know when a lobster is done? It's difficult to tell sometimes when you're steaming it to know that the actual meat is cooked through.
Yeah. Well, rule of thumb, if you're cooking a pound and a half lobster, it's probably going to take 8 to 10 minutes. A pound and a quarter lobster is probably going to take about 6 to 8 minutes in, you know, rapidly boiling water. But they also tend to float, Elizabeth, when they're done. So that's, you know, when you see the lobster float up to the top, and they all will, if you're cooking it like pasta in a large pot with lots of water, rapidly boiling water, you'll see them float up to the top. And then I usually leave them in for another minute or so just to be sure, and then I pull them out.
I know some people are not too keen on actually killing the lobster, and they can have the fishmonger do it for them. Would you suggest that, or does it just start deteriorating?
No, because, you know, if you want a lobster boiled or steamed, you want to do it when you're going to eat it. You don't want to have some pre-cooked thing.
And is the time for steaming the same as boiling, and is it more painful for the lobster to steam it?
Steaming, although it seems like it might be a more cruel way to kill, is actually much hotter. And it cooks a little bit faster when you steam. But, of course, you have to make sure that you have the right amount of water, then a rack, and a very tightly closed lid. And it's actually probably less cruel to kill a lobster that way.
Thanks.
Oh, okay. Sure. We also want to let you know that we have some great recipes on our website, on the show page at WNYC.org. We are here with Rebecca Charles. She's the chef and owner of Pearl Oyster Bar in the West Village. We are talking about summer seafood cooking. What are some of the other great dishes that you would cook perhaps on a summer's night as far as seafood goes?
Well, you always have to have raw bar, I think.
Oh, oysters and
clams. Yeah, I've been eating raw clams and oysters my whole life. And, you know, that was why when I opened Pearl Oyster Bar, I had to have a raw bar selection. And I think, you know, there were not too many restaurants doing it at the time. Of course, everybody has a raw bar now. But I like to start the meal off with raw oysters and clams. And I actually brought a few here.
Oh, my favorite.
To sort of show.
You're going to teach us how to shuck an oyster?
Yes. Unfortunately, they won't be able to see it, but they can hear it. Let's start with these clams. I brought some little necks with me.
Oh, great.
Which come from Long Island.
Yeah, those are local, right?
Yeah. Yep, they're local. And so you can see the size of a little neck. It's about 2 inches to 3 inches. I also brought a quahog because the guys were cooking our chowder clams.
Look at that.
This enormous quahog, which is about 3.5 inches long. And they're really not good for anything but chowder. So we
You wouldn't eat those at a raw bar?
You'd be chewing like gum
for a
very long time.
Yeah.
So we mince these really finely and use them in our chowder. That's what they're traditionally used for. So the idea when you're opening clams, and I have gone to the hospital, I think, twice for when I was clam shucking at the restaurant, back in the days when we were small and didn't have much staff, and I was trying to do everything. But be careful. You want to hold the clam with the hinge part of it in the palm of your hand, and then hold the edge of the clam with your fingers. It might not make much sense to you unless you see it, but I'm trying to describe it. And then you put the clam knife right in the edge where you see the seam. Mm-hmm. And the hard thing about it is finding the seam. And as you can see now, I'm having a little trouble finding the seam. And the problem with clams, when you try to open them, is if you don't get that seam right away, they clam up.
Oh.
And that's hence the phrase, clamming up.
Uh-huh.
They know you're coming for them.
Okay.
And they just close those shells really tightly. So we always try to sneak up on them.
It's a self-defense mechanism, yeah.
So let's see if I can get this one. Okay.
Oh, you
so
got it.
Then the knife goes in. Mm-hmm. You hold it sideways to preserve the liquor so it doesn't, you know, slip out. And then put your fingers on the edge of that, pushing the knife in. And then you bring the knife in about halfway, just enough to cut the muscle, but not enough to cut the belly of the clam, which you want to keep whole. So now I'm turning my knife sideways, still holding it level, and I pull the top back with my other hand, and there you have it.
Wow.
That's a clam belly uncut
right
by the knife. And that's the hardest thing about opening clams. And then you score
underneath
the the meat down from the top shell, break off the shell, and then you score the muscles on the bottom shell, so then you can pick it up and it won't actually be sticking to the shell. And this one's got lots of liquor. You can see it's got lots of juice.
And there's your clam on the half shell.
And that's clam on the half shell. And, you know, you see the guys at like at Nathan's, they open these things like 20 a minute. It's unbelievable. So this is what they're traditionally served with.
You have a cocktail sauce, of course, lemon.
You know,
I don't
know
like cocktail sauce.
People frown on cocktail sauce.
Horseradish, just plain horseradish is good.
Plain horseradish is great. But, you know, just being of the generation that I am.
And just lemon.
I can't help wanting a little cocktail on it. I know. Americans put ketchup on everything. It's so sad. But.
We're talking to Chef Rebecca Charles of the Pearl Oyster Bar here on WNYC in New York. How was that?
I had to eat that clam myself. That was so rude. But
Well, I'm looking at that oyster. Let's move on to the oysters.
All right. You'll get
oyster. Are those Blue Point oysters?
Actually, I've actually heard fish guys say everything on the East Coast is Blue Point oyster or some variation on a Blue Point oyster. And the Latin name is, what the hell is it, Crassatia virginica, I think. And every oyster on the East Coast is of the same species. But, I mean, that said, every little cove and bay has their own oyster. And now that oysters have become such all the rage, everybody wants to have go to oyster bars and learn about all the different kinds.
My favorite is Wellfleet oysters.
That's my favorite, too.
And actually, when I was up on Cape Cod, I made sure to go to Wellfleet to actually eat a Wellfleet oyster in Wellfleet.
I can't believe you said that. So you went to the source.
Yes.
That's my favorite oyster, but they're very expensive. Wholesale, somewhere around 75 cents per oyster. Mm. I have a democratic restaurant. I like the people to come. You know, I like people to be able to afford to have a dozen oysters and then still eat their meal and not feel like it's going to break the bank. So,
let's take another – while you're going to shuck that oyster, let's take another call.
Sure.
Gail from Brooklyn.
It's Nathan.
Hello, Gail from Brooklyn. Are you on the line? You're on WNYC.
Yes, I am. I love Rebecca Charles's food, and I just want to ask about, is there a time of year when oysters are not considered edible?
Oh, is there an old wives' tale with the if there's an R in a certain month?
The saying goes, you know, only eat them in the R months, and that's not as true as you might think it is. I mean, let's just mitigate it by saying oysters come from all over the place now. The reason for the saying is that they spawn in when the weather gets warm and the water gets warm, they spawn. And so the oysters don't necessarily taste great when they're spawning. Also, they're not those, you know, plump little devils that you want to eat. They're kind of watery, translucent. That's what happens when they spawn. But you can get good oysters in those months. So it's really not exactly true.
Okay, I just want to make sure they won't kill me.
No. It's nothing like that. It's just that you might not get that plump, lovely thing that you had in mind.
Okay, thank you so much, and I love you for cooking. And you know, all those people who spun off of you can't touch you with a yardstick.
Oh, well, thank you so much for calling.
You.
I love you, too.
Okay.
Thanks, Gail.
Bye.
We're here with Chef Rebecca Charles of the Pearl Oyster Bar. She shucks an oyster as we discuss summer seafood here on WNYC.
So, Richard, this oyster that I brought with me is not from New England, so, but I do get oysters from up and down the East Coast, and I'm trying a new oyster company, and they brought me something that I kind of like. It's called a Sawansicott. It's from – there's a Hog Island on the East Coast, so don't get it confused with the one on the West Coast, and that's what I brought to open. When you open an oyster, you know, put it down firmly on a towel like I'm doing, and put your knife into the hinge, and – pop it open.
Yeah. And you definitely need to use a towel for this one because the oysters, unlike the clams, can actually really seriously do damage to your hand.
Yeah. Well, you know, the oyster shell is rough. So bring the towel up and around and over and hold the oyster down firmly with the towel. But then once you pop it open, you slide your knife down the side. And halfway down, you turn your knife sideways. But you want to cut that muscle first. So you're sliding your knife down. Cut the muscle, take the top shell off, and then cut the muscle on the bottom shell.
You make it look so easy.
And there you have your perfect oyster. If you do happen to nick it a little bit, flip it over. That is good oyster etiquette. Nobody wants to get an oyster that's been cut. So, Richard, I'm going to give this one to you.
That looks delicious.
And I usually serve it at the restaurant with a little bit of mignonette and cocktail sauce.
Mm-hmm.
and lemon. So you can be a purist and just squirt lemon on it, or you can have your condiments, which we Americans so love.
Well, while I get to slurp on the radio right now, there's a question. I've never done that before. There's a question on our show page. Can you grill lobster or oysters?
Of course. That's my favorite way to prepare lobster and oysters. So I'm amazed that question was asked, because I love to cook them that way. I think they taste better in a way, because the shell gives the – you like that one,
that was
huh?
delicious. That was really good.
Set you up for your weekend. The shell imparts a lot of flavor to the meat, just like when you cook meat on the bone. It's the same thing with fish. Cooking fish on the bone or in the shell gives it a lot more flavor. And it's fun also because, you know, you're standing outside, you're grilling. I started grilling lobsters when I was living in Maine years ago. And I just decided, you know, I don't want to boil this anymore. It makes a mess of the kitchen. Let me just cut it, throw it on the grill, see how that goes. And that was like in the 80s. And I'm a big fan of grilling now. In fact, I do serve it at my restaurant grilled. Oysters grilling is also fun. So you can have a grilling party, start with the oysters, open them up, and then as you're standing around with your friends drinking wine, put the oysters on the grill carefully so that you don't want to lose the liquor. They're done in, oh, I don't know, maybe a minute and a half. And you can actually just pull them off because they don't get that hot. And I make a little bit of butter sauce, which I think you have the recipe for.
It's on our website.
A really nice butter sauce. Ladle that on, and those grilled oysters with butter sauce, a little champagne, and then move on to grilled lobsters. You could die after that and not even be sorry. You've eaten this great, great dinner.
There's another mollusk that we failed to talk about. What about mussels?
I adore mussels. I'm a big fan of French bistro cooking. I always have been. In fact, I wanted to open a French bistro years ago, but mussels are key on a bistro menu, and I put some bistro things on my menu because I adore them. A lot of the mussels that we get now are farmed. A lot of the food, you know, the fish that we get is farmed. Certainly nothing wrong with that.
And they're easier to clean now, the mussels, because they don't have that, little beard on it.
There's very little cleaning necessary, Richard, because you don't get – in the old days, you got mussels with barnacles all over them and huge beards sticking out the sides. You couldn't even get them out. But the farm mussels are a little less muscular, pardon the pun, and the shells are clean. So there's, you know, very little cleaning necessary. And they come from, you know, Prince Edward Island, Nova Scotia area.
I received a tip once from a fishmonger when I bought mussels. He said to soak them in a little bit of flour before you cook them. And actually, they will be plumper afterwards when you cook them.
Hmm.
And somehow they absorb the flour and you get a plumper mussel.
Uh-huh. Well, they eat them. I would think they would eat, you know, the flour. Just the way when you have steamers, for instance, soft-shell clam steamers, they need to be purged, and we use cornmeal to purge them. So it's sort of the same kind of thing. They eat the cornmeal, and they actually get a little bit sweeter, I think.
Okay, we want to mention that some of our recipes, Chef Rebecca Charles's recipes, is on our website at WNYC.org. We'd like to thank you so much for coming in. Your restaurant is the Pearl Oyster Bar in the West Village. Also, your book is called Lobster Rolls and Blueberry Pie, Three Generations of Recipes and Stories from Summers on the Coast of Maine. Thanks so much. It's been a lot of fun.
Thanks, Richard.
And delicious.